Michael Avery with Classic Business. Welcome back to the show. It's just gone 29 minutes to 7 here on Classic Business, and time for a share shootout, a good old share shootout. We haven't done one of these in a while. And tonight it's offshore with all the usual caveats. Picking a few individual stocks or ETFs isn't the same as building a well-balanced, diversified portfolio, but it does introduce you to the broader universe of options, and we have a whole lot of fun doing it as well. So let's introduce our trio of intrepid stock pickers tonight, starting with Asif Mohammed, who's the Chief Investment Officer at Aon Investment Management. Asif, thanks for joining us. British Airways and their time issues notwithstanding. Let's welcome our next guest, Pietri Redlinghuis, founder and trader at Arena Capital Advisors. Pietri, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Super. Welcome to the show. And we've also got Graham Corner, Portfolio Manager at Corner Perspective. Graham, good evening and welcome to the show.
Good evening, Michael. Thanks very much.
Let's try one more time. I can see Asif and his screen is flashing red at me. So, Asif, shout if you're on the line.
Yes, I'm on the line now.
Ah, super. Thanks. Thanks so much for making it. I understand you had some issues with British Airways and a flight being delayed. It's certainly becoming a habit for BA. They need to up their game. Graham, you've gone first up. Let's just set the rules. We've asked each of you to select three of the best. That gives you roughly 3 minutes to tell us why. And Graham, you've gone with a global banking giant, HSBC. It's the biggest non-Chinese bank, assets in excess of $2.5 trillion. But it has had some hiccups of late. Its dividend has stagnated a little over the last few years. What do you like about HSBC?
Well, Michael, what like is really the size. You in your introduction, you were saying, all the caveats around, single stocks. Here you've got a company with, I think, a 2.3 trillion rand market cap. This is big by anybody's standards, apart from the Chinese banks, as you say. It is massive. I think what we really like about them is the fact that they really are just about everywhere in the world, but I'd say in the places that really matter. If you take a positive view on emerging markets, if you believe in the west to east wealth migration and north to south, this, we believe, is a company that's really going to benefit from that. They very much an emerging market player, and if you look, for example, at where they generate their revenue and particularly their profits, Asia is a very, very strong market, and we believe that even if Chinese growth slips to 6%, it still trumps what everything else is doing in the world, and India is not too different from that. So we think they're in the right markets. As you say, it's been difficult, fines and very sluggish growth and having to deal with things like Brexit, although Europe is very small overall in their life. Not really moving the earnings needle very much, but our view is a forward PE on a next 12 months of 12 times and a dividend yield of 6%. It eases us against some of the angst. Because if you think about it, let's look at it comparatively. You're getting maybe a fractional yield on dollars, you get negative on euros, and you get virtually nothing on pounds. So, that 6% yield after 3 years is giving you almost 20%. That alone is a good reason to be there. But it's a great franchise. It really is. If you want to put a label on something being too big to fail, this really ticks that box.
Yeah, that is a fantastic moat case for it, and also a significant margin of safety in those numbers as well. From a valuation perspective, a PE of around 12 with that global diversification is nothing to sneeze at. Asif, first up, you've clicked on the king of search, Alphabet. I know the company changed its name to Alphabet a few years ago, but Google still makes up the majority of its revenues and profits, despite its alphabet soup of different products and services. And the fact is, we use the word Google as a noun. So, that just tells you everything about how ubiquitous it's become to our lives. What do you like about it from an investment perspective?
Yeah, what I like about it is that it's all about search and all about advertising. And they've got the biggest market share. People really don't speak about the other search engines, like Bing or a couple of other search engines. I can't even remember the name. if you speak to everybody, it's Google, and it's just, you know, whether it's on your phone, Google Maps, you know, all of those things. So they really, if you look at your email also, most people have Gmail as their email, private email. So they've really cornered the advertising market in a big way. They're growing earnings. They're on a price earnings multiple of about 20 times, forward multiple of about 20 times. It's a well-run company. They are going into other areas. They are going into cloud, Google Cloud. They haven't broken into that yet. Microsoft is doing a bit better than them. They're competing against Amazon Web Services for cloud, but they're getting there. So I like Alphabet, or probably better known as Google. I think the prospects are great longer term. So that's it.
What are the risks to Google? I know the talk on the Capitol over in the US from US lawmakers is that the tech firms, the Googles, the Facebooks, have become too big, too powerful, time to break them up. Surely that's got to be something of a risk.
It has been happening in Europe where they have done that, where they've actually fined them for having dominant positions. Google is obviously fighting it in Europe, and it possibly could happen in the United States. But that's just the risk of the business that you run with. The other thing that's also a bit of a positive is they've got a very low debt to equity ratio. I think it's less than 5%. So it's a good balance sheet to grow. And I'm positive about it, not only in the short term, but also in the long term. It's grown in, over the last year. I think it's gone up about 20 to 25%. It's a good return it's had.
Yeah, and that cash on hand also means it's got the ability to potentially invest in disruptive technologies that could try and sneak up on it. It is why tech stocks do tend to have this inbuilt moat, those that have already grown to significant scale. Another reason, though, that I think a lot of antitrust authorities all over the world are looking at these companies. I just don't know how you break them up once they've got that arm lock. So I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's certainly one for the medium term. Pietri, following a blazing hot start to the year, marijuana stocks have treaded water in the last couple of months. You've gone with Horizons Marijuana Life Sciences ETF. So it's not technically a stock, it's a basket of marijuana stocks. How is it compiled?
Right. So I think firstly I should put the disclaimer in that my stocks are probably a lot riskier than the other two. but all right, so the Marijuana Life Sciences, or the Horizon Marijuana Life Sciences ETF is what it's called, basically tracks the North American Marijuana Index, which is made up of around 70 individual companies, or 70 individual marijuana and marijuana-related stocks. So not all of them are marijuana producers. Some are hemp manufacturers and that kind of stuff as well. But it is sort of basketing together a lot of different marijuana-related industrial stocks, whether they produce gummy sweets or whether they produce, whether they have dispensaries and grow marijuana and sell them through the dispensaries for either medical and or recreational use, depending on where they sell them. It is listed in Toronto because most of these cannabis stocks or marijuana stocks are listing in Canada at the moment. And basically the idea behind this is that this is an emerging industry where we have a lot of deregulation, a lot of legalization happening at an accelerating pace around the world. Most notably in the US, which is kind of leading the pack. There's discussions starting to happen in South Africa. Should we decriminalize? Should we allow it to be manufactured and sold recreationally and that type of stuff? So it is, to me, I would compare it to the end of prohibition when alcohol had gone from illegal to anybody can make it and sell it. And we're in that sort of phase of this emerging new industry. So to pick an individual winner is going to be very, very difficult. There are two major choices, I think, you have between the broader North American marijuana index or sort of an emerging marijuana index, which is smaller companies that are potentially more volatile, have higher momentum, that kind of stuff. But the broader index is quite a nice pick, I think, because it gives you access to an emerging industry where you don't have to have the pressure of trying to find, you know, individually which stock is going to perform the best. Some of them are doing really well. Most of them are actually sort of not yet making a huge profit because they're spending a lot of money on R&D and expansion and so on. So this index kind of tracks the whole industry. And I think that if you, you know, if you think that where this is the potential to go in the next 50 years, there's talk of, you know, including marijuana in being beverages, alcoholic beverages, or even having non-alcoholic, just marijuana-based beverages. That type of stuff is really, really exciting, I think. And this is something that we, over the next 50 years or so, will see tremendous growth in, both medicinal use as well as recreational.
Growing like weeds, I couldn't resist that, PG. But I want to come back to one of your points earlier, the end of prohibition, which saw the rise of a couple of backyard breweries. But really, it's quite difficult to brew beer at home or brew it at scale significantly as a consumer. So the ABIs and the SABs of this world did have an advantage as large-scale brewers. Isn't that a risk for potential weed manufacturers? Anyone can really grow it in their back garden.
What happened over like 100 years with... you know, with alcohol, really, is that every Tom, Dick, and Harry can go out and make the stuff. It's not really that difficult. You can brew beer at home. You just need a bit of patience, a bit of know-how. It's not as easy to grow marijuana either, you know. So what happens is you have tons of competition, hundreds of players, and over 100 years we saw, you know, the alcohol industry consolidating to what it is today. SAB, AB InBev, or Anheuser-Busch. You know, these companies are absolutely dominating, and what they've done is they've bought up the smaller companies along the way. So instead of backing just one company and, you know, at risk that that company might fail, might get bought out, hey, it might even turn into the big multinational conglomerate, back the entire index, and you kind of have all of that built into your return already.
Yeah. 4 dozen pot stocks, that gives you a bit of pot luck into the emerging nascent industry of marijuana. Graham, GlaxoSmithKline, on the other side of this pharmaceutical operation, obviously treating the big demographic trend, and that is we're getting older, we're living longer, and so our use of particular drugs and pharmaceuticals will no doubt be on the increase. Why this particular global pharmaceutical behemoth?
Well, I suppose if you get some respiratory problems courtesy of Beatrice's previous recommendation, this is the one to go for. They're very big in pharmaceuticals, in respiratory drugs. They earned almost £7 billion of revenue there. But seriously, I think what we like about it is it's sometimes difficult to pick the blockbuster winners. You know, who's going to come up with the next wonder drug that's going to sort of try and generate billions of profits. What we like about GSK is it's sort of a level down. So they big in, as I said, if you look in pharmaceuticals, big in HIV treatment, they made almost £5 billion of revenue there, big in respiratory, and even in their established pharmaceutical portfolio, sort of fairly traditional, fairly conservative. But the other thing we quite like is they're very big in vaccines. They had almost €6 billion worth of revenue in that space. And that's everything, you know, sort of from meningitis, hepatitis, normal flu vaccine. So, you know, I guess pretty much most of us would have been at some point in time vaccinated with GSK-type products. And what we like about those particularly is the fact that they're fairly defensive, you know. You find that I think they're dispensing 1.9 million vaccines a day as a company. That we like, and I think the barriers are reasonably high there. And then the last leg to the business is a very significant consumer healthcare portfolio. But people will know things like Sensodyne and Aquafresh and, you know, Nicorette and Contac and, you know, a whole range of consumer health products. A few years ago, they sold the oncology business, which is one of the things we quite like about them. You know, when businesses say, okay, well, we're a little bit worried about the future, they sold that, effectively went into a consumer health JV with Novartis. They've subsequently bought all of that and built a really good portfolio. I mean, things like Voltaren also sit in that portfolio. And in December, they actually announced another JV in the consumer health space with Pfizer. And that combined entity is going to have over £10 billion of revenue. They'll still probably represent about 80% of it. But what I'm saying, Michael, is it's the same as HSBC. These are big businesses, fundamentally defensive, you know, arguably a little bit boring. But what I like about them is that they're doing stuff. They're really trying. You know, they're selling things that they feel are not really value accretive. They're repositioning the portfolio. And more recently, they've started R&D, quite big R&D in oncology again.
And, so, and on the HIV side, I see they've recently got FDA approval for an HIV treatment made up of two rather than the usual three drugs. So I mean, it does demonstrate the kind of R&D that they're doing. Graham, I've got to stop you there because we are running out of time. So I've got to move us swiftly along. Very interesting that. Asif, your second choice, Microsoft, historically known as a high growth tech company, but it's probably one of the most mature tech companies that still pays a dividend.
Yes, I like it very much because simply because the moat is very, very big around it. And if you, you know, chat to corporates and you know, individuals, most of them use Microsoft Office products. And what they've been doing in the last few years is successfully converting, you know, your outright purchase of the software to an annuity annual payment for the use of Microsoft Office 365. And they've been doing it very successfully. So getting an annuity business going there in enterprise business. But more important also, and I've mentioned where Google hasn't succeeded or Alphabet in terms yet in terms of the cloud, where Amazon has been very, very when they disclose how much profit they make from Amazon Web Services. Microsoft Azure has gone into that market and they are making big impact in that market. They're gaining customers, they're gaining a corporate market share, and the feedback from corporate customers are really it's really good. Microsoft also gains a number of other areas that they focus on. I think I do agree. I would say it's on a steaming valuation of about 30 times, and that is a problem. They've recently bought LinkedIn also. I don't really expect much from LinkedIn, but I think that they well poised in terms of growth going forward. As I said, it is a bit steamy in terms of valuation. But it's a good business. You'll get the cash flows. The debt to equity ratio is just about 30% as such. And they've issued long, bonds at very low rates, a good credit quality, and I really like it. We hold it on behalf of our clients and followers, both Alphabet and Microsoft.
As you say, but not cheap, but you are paying for quality. And I know Altron is doing some fantastic work as an Azure reseller in the UK, growing its business there phenomenally well. Satya Nadella has done a great job since taking over from the likes of Bill Gates over at Microsoft. Petri, Visarion PLC. Now, this is one you've brought to me in the past, a small cap UK listed company. Just remind us what you like about the whole graphene story. Firstly, what is graphene for those who are not materials geeks?
Yeah, so I feel a bit like a one-trick pony, really. But I think that, you know, you've got to have some conviction. And if you take these really longer-term high-risk plays, you have to give them some time to work out. So Visarion does a number of things. So they do industrial sort of heating elements and heat-resistant materials and that type of stuff that you might find in big industrial equipment, heat sinks and that sort of stuff. They also do industrial hardware or safety gear, fancy way for construction that if some concrete block falls in your leg, it doesn't tear off and that kind of stuff. And then also they make a new type of material. It's not that new. It's been around for a long time. They started cooking it up in labs at MIT, a couple of decades ago already. But Versorion is really the world's first industrial scale manufacturer of this particular material. Now, it has a number of different and really interesting properties. One, it's incredibly heat resistant. It's incredibly strong, and it's considered a superconductor. So you can literally build a wire that is one molecule thick, and it can resist heat and it can conduct electricity as good as what gold can, if not better. So the application for this is potentially in microprocessors. We see that, that Technology is advancing really fast, and Moore's law dictates that the faster we want processors to go, the smaller we need to make them, and this is potentially a gateway to do that. You can also use graphene in applications like wearable technology, where you can print it on a shirt, you can twist the shirt, you can wash the shirt, but you can still use the shirt to press buttons to control the aircon in your room, for example. So it is a really very exciting type of material that can be used for, you know, unknown applications. For example, you can create a one molecule thick sheet of graphene that is strong enough to hold a soccer ball without bending, and it's one molecule thick. That is incredible.
What about new technologies? I've got to interject there quickly, Pietri, because we once again have to move along swiftly. Ever heard of borophene? That's apparently the latest super strong, very dense, very light material. I worry about these plays, and the technology just moves so quickly. And it's the same can be said of the battery technology space at the moment. Is the lithium ion battery going to be the battery that delivers us to our renewable nirvana in the next 10 years? Is it going to be a solid state battery? I see risks.
Look, I mean, we don't quite know, and you're right, technology does move along, but the advantage that Versorion has is that they have manufacturing capability of this. They're setting up a plant in Houston to get access to the American market. They've already set up plants in China, where they have, you know, they're very close to microprocessor manufacturers. They've started making sort of, you know, agreements and deals with people who are creating all sorts of electronic products and starting to use graphene in those products. So yes, the company is currently still running at a small loss. Well, it is running at a loss, but revenues are increasing. It's got a very solid debt-to-equity ratio of 7%, so it can cover its obligations in, you know, in a worst-case scenario type situation. So it's, I think, you know, the financial health of the company, yes, it's fairly stable. Yes, it's running at a loss, but it is also kind of the first mover in an industry that we don't yet know where it's going to go. And the advantage is that they can make the stuff in quantities that nobody else can.
Petri, I've got to stop you there. Loving that you're backing this one and you're sticking to your guns and the courage of your conviction. Graham, last on your list is a French banking giant, much like HSBC, BNP Paribas, it's a global banking giant.
Yeah, very much. Although very much, you know, sort of got a strong European flavor, which I think is one of the reasons why it's been smashed along with the other European banks. And, you know, there's anemic growth, and we've got Brexit, and we've got, you know, chaos in Italy. So a lot of the European banks are trading at massive discounts to book value. And I know we're pressed for time. So I think for us, not far behind HSBC and JP Morgan in terms of assets, although obviously the market cap is quite a bit smaller than HSBC. Michael, what we'd like is if you go and watch the investment analyst presentation, you get the feeling that in spite of being in a volatile industry, potentially volatile industry, management are very comfortable with the positioning. They've got relatively high visibility, comfortable with the dividend, with progressive dividend policies. So I think the thing that draws us is you've got a business that we believe, if you get a normalization in monetary policy, which will one day come, but you know, you're sitting in a very anemic growth environment, very low interest rate environment, difficult, PE of under 8, dividend yield of over 6, approaching 7. But the thing that really draws us to them is the fact that the price to book is about 0.5. It's more expensive than the likes of UniCredit and Commerzbank, for example, but we think it's really top quality, very, very predictable, and I think it's out of the big banks in Europe, next to maybe a Santander, probably the safest bet.
And on a price, a forward price to book, as you say, of 0.5, and that 7% dividend as well, very attractive indeed. Asif, you've gone from A to V, Volkswagen. Now, it's a stock that saw quite a significant sell-off in 2018. There's been issues around the structural decline of the petrol and diesel powered drivetrains of motor cars. We're going to self-driving vehicles. There's the emission scandal. What revs you up about VW?
Yes, you're right. The diesel scandal was a big negative on it. You know, self-driving cars, you know, e-hailing. There's a lot of risks out there. But the one thing that it's a big company, it's a great brand. Volkswagen is a great brand. We all know it. Good quality cars, generally speaking. They also produce Audi. You know, the investment thesis really is based on valuation. It's trading on a multiple, PE of 6. That's cheap relative to its history. And also, it's starting to grow market share with the new models coming through also. You see them making traction in gaining market share. I think it's well poised from that perspective. And hopefully they've learned from the diesel scandal. And you won't have a repeat of it going forward. Steady growth going forward. It's not going to be great growth, but then again, it's priced for that. 6 multiple, it's cheap for a quality car manufacturer.
Yeah, margin of safety galore in that one. Pietri, I'm sorry to see a golden thread with your picks tonight. Certainly riskier, but the last one you've poured into the mug is the iPath Series B Bloomberg Coffee Sub-Index Total Return ETN. Now, it's a mouthful because it's all about coffee. And if coffee futures aren't your thing, well, there's a way to get into it via this ETN. What's an ETN, firstly?
So an ETN is an exchange-traded note. So it's an interchangeable, I suppose, with exchange-traded fund. It's not quite the same as exchange-traded fund, but an exchange-traded note. Essentially, it holds an underlying asset, and then you can buy and sell this on exchange, and there's usually a market maker, in this case, iPath, that sits on both sides of the spread that you can buy and sell to. So it's like an ETF, really. The underlying asset in this ETF, or in this ETN, is coffee futures, KR. Basically, so you've got a... I've been looking a little bit at the comparisons between what's happening with coffee prices at the moment and what's happened with oil. I think it was 2015 when we bottomed out in oil, where the oil market entered into something called backwardation, which is where oil being produced today can be sold for more expensive than oil that is produced in 3 months from now.
Contango, so, yes.
Yes. So basically what happens is that if you plant coffee, so now this is starting to happen in coffee, if you plant coffee now, you know that coffee, your crop is only going to come in a couple of months from now, and futures dated, in long-dated futures are trading at a lower price than current production prices. So if you plant coffee now, you're going to lose money by the time that you harvest and try and sell. So what's going to happen? Fewer people are going to plant, right? All this, we got into the situation because we've had an absolute bumper, biggest ever on record crop or harvest from Brazil due to favorable weather conditions. And now, unfortunately, we're in a situation where we are oversupplied with coffee. And we've now reached a point where, that market is absolutely saturated. And I think that from here, we see a similar move. It takes maybe a year or two from here to get back up. But I think that we have a similar type of opportunity that we saw in the oil market a couple of years ago.
Very interesting indeed. We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much. Pietri Redlinghuis, founder of Hirenia Capital Advisors. Catch him on YouTube tonight. He's got some great trading ideas for you with the Horizons Marijuana Life Sciences ETF, Versarian PLC, and the iPath Series B Bloomberg Coffee Sub-Index Total Return ETN. Thank you to Asif Mohammed, Chief Investment Officer of Aon Investment Management, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Volkswagen, and to Graham Corner, Portfolio Manager at Corner Perspective, HSBC, GSK, and BNP Paribas. Thanks for tuning in to the show tonight. For Cape Town listeners, there's no Jazz Lounge, I'm afraid, as FMR is going to be broadcasting the finals of the FMR Bursary Awards competition from the Baxter Theatre, so you've got that to look forward to. And for listeners in Gauteng, well, you can sit back and relax. You've got the always lovely, the always professional Anne Williams, who's standing in for Carolyn Staines' Classic Winding Down. Good night.